Ahoy there, Bradford here, and this week I've got some info on how not to buy a boat. What could possibly go wrong? How Not to Sail, brought to you by our awesome Patreon patrons, Latitudes and Attitudes, America's number one boating lifestyle magazine, the great books at bobbitchin.com, and of course, my book, How Not to Sail. It all started in the fall of 2012. Halloween 2012, to be exact. That year, I dressed up as Blackbeard. And a couple days later, a sailboat fell into my lap. Now, some people do a lot of due diligence when they're looking for a boat. I did not. In my defense, I wasn't actually looking for a boat just then. I did have saltwater fever. Had it for a long time, in fact, but I didn't think I was in a position to go buying a new sailboat just then, or even a used one. But buy one I did, and I haven't looked back since. Don't get me wrong, like me, she's not perfect. She's got plenty of flaws, and she seems to get more decrepit as time goes by. But she seems to stay stubbornly afloat year after year. Now, the fact that my boat has lasted a decade and 8,000 miles or so is not attributable to any kind of diligence on my part. Nope, it's pretty much dumb luck that I happened upon a sailboat in good shape which had been owned by a couple of meticulous sailors. That, and it was on fresh water. More on that some other time. That said, I believe I've rediscovered some truths about selecting your dream vessel. And in true How Not to Sail fashion, I'm going to give it to you backwards, just like in the book. And I'm going to enlist the help of my friend Bill. Bill and his brother-in-law have an O'Day 22 up on Lake Lanier, so he's been getting acquainted with the joys of sailing. Or maybe it's the joys of going up to the lake to work on your boat. Irregardless, as Bill would say, let's let him give you the first How Not to Sail 101 today.
Of course you want to get the biggest boat you can almost afford. They're so much more comfortable, and you can't have all your grand offshore adventures in a puny little boat. Let's face it, bigger sailboats are just cooler.
Okay, size does matter, but when it comes to selecting a sailboat, it kind of works the opposite of what the ladies say about other things. A bigger boat means more money, more work, and if you're single-handing a lot like me, less safe above a certain length. Yes, I'm still talking about the boat, as far as you know. One thing that goes up with the length of your boat is slip fees, which is why in some of the more expensive marinas, my vessel may or may not suddenly become a foot shorter. The Admiral doesn't think it's that amusing, but if they're getting $5 a foot per night, I figure it's my little protest. Anyway, it's not just slip fees that cost more with a bigger boat. There's also the insurance and the loan payment, if you're foolish enough to take out a loan. But please don't do that. Aside from that, though, there are some hidden costs to a larger boat, like all of the gear has to be more heavy duty. Bigger winches, thicker lines, bigger engine. Where on my friend Bill's boat, he only needs an outboard, I need a Yanmar diesel engine. And all of that boils down to, you guessed it, more money. And finally, there's safety. I consider my 37-foot cutter, or occasionally 36-foot cutter, to be just about the upper end of what I'm comfortable sailing by myself, and I'd suggest the same for many cruising couples. There are plenty of sailboats shorter than mine that are more seaworthy. Heck, the smallest sailboat to cross the Atlantic was 7 feet 9 inches long. But if you lust after a boat that's too big, you're going to have a harder time operating it, and a harder time paying for it, which just means that much longer before you can actually get out there and use it.
Hey y'all, Bradford's friend Bill here. So, if you want much more of Bradford's so-called advice on how not to buy a boat, not to mention how not to operate it, and a generous helping of Bradford's screw-ups so you don't have to make the same mistakes, I highly recommend you grab a copy of the book, How Not to Sail. I'm told you can find a link to it in the show notes for this episode at HowNotToSail.com. You do read the show notes for each episode, right? Besides the link to get a copy of How Not to Sail, you'll also see some links to a couple of other great books on how to get cruising sooner by not spending yourself into bankruptcy on stuff you don't need. Anywho, back to the show.
Thanks, amigo. Bill's also one of our esteemed patrons, by the way, which reminds me to mention that the companionway hatch is now back open, so to speak, and we're able to accept new members on Patreon, which helps keep this rotting hulk afloat. So if you want to join the Patreon crew for as little as $3 a month, just go to hownottosail.com/Patreon, or look in the show notes at hownottosail.com for the link. I want to touch on one more major tip on what not to do when buying a sailboat, or really any boat, and that has to do with what you might call the myth of the perfect boat. Which brings us to another How Not to Sail 101 moment.
Don't give up. Keep searching for that perfect boat. It's out there. No, really. I'm sure that somewhere in the world is a boat you can afford that meets every single criterion on your list. Roomy inside, but comfortable and safe at sea. The perfect layout and galley. Tons of water and fuel tankage. The perfect rig. Just be patient and don't settle for anything less than your dream boat. You may miss out on some great experiences in the meantime, but that's just the way it goes.
So, as I alluded to in the book, I have another friend, who shall remain nameless, who considered buying a sailboat. And to that end, Todd created a spreadsheet comparing various models with specs like fuel and water capacity, comfort ratio, and various other notes, like whether the traveler was located on the cabin top or on the companionway step. After I bought J.C. Sails, he was even able to quote me a number of things about my boat that I didn't even know. However, Todd never bought a sailboat. He did buy a motorcycle, though, which may have been a marginally smarter investment, since motorcycles don't tend to sink, run aground, or get struck by lightning. As I mentioned, I arrived at my sailboat purchase in a more random sort of way. After years of thinking about buying a sailboat and not doing it, I dressed up like Blackbeard for Halloween.
Yarr.
And a couple of days later, a sailboat basically fell into my lap. I didn't really know what features I was looking for, other than I figured one mast was probably enough masts for me, and I wanted a boat that could go cruising. And that's about it. Now, I don't suggest you be as cavalier about it as I was, but the thing is, if you wait for the perfect boat, you're going to be waiting a long time to go cruising. So maybe you're thinking of a sloop and you run into a nice cutter, or maybe the galley or the nav station or the head isn't laid out the way you envisioned. Maybe it doesn't even have a head or a galley or a nav station. Maybe it's got a gas engine instead of diesel. Okay, in that case, make sure you're on top of your safety. They don't call them atomic fours for nothing. Maybe you've been lusting after something specific. A Beneteau or a Hans Christian or tartan or Cape Dory or whatever. Maybe you even have a specific reason you're looking for a specific boat. Irregardless, as my friend Bill would say, if you run into something that's actually available, that's affordable without a loan, in good shape, and passes a survey, maybe it's the boat that gets you out cruising sooner. Maybe she needs some new paint on the cabin top, or a new mainsail, or maybe the fuel and water tanks aren't all 100 gallons. But if she's a sound vessel, maybe you should broaden your horizons a little. And maybe, just maybe, I'll see you out on the water before we're both too old to go sailing. Don't forget you can get more tips on how not to buy a boat in my book, How Not to Sail, as well as the two other good books I mention in the show notes at hownottosail.com. And if you're hearing this a while after the release date, you can always find the show notes for any episode by going to hownottosail.com/the episode number. So in this case, hownottosail.com/4747.
Okay, then.
As always, thank you to our awesome Patreon patrons, including my buddy Bill, who helped me out on this episode, and Captain Bob Bitchin and the crew at Latitudes and Attitudes, America's number one boating lifestyle magazine. And of course, thank you for listening and telling your friends about How Not to Sail. Don't forget to check out the show notes at hownottosail.com/47 if you're a little late to the party, or if you get this while it's fresh, it'll be right there on the homepage at hownottosail.com. Of course, hownottosail.com is your home for everything How Not to Sail, not just the podcast, but blog posts and tips and videos and books and the store with all kind of cool How Not to Sail gear. If you forget, the How Not to Sail hotline is 770-458-3838. You can always just go under the Contact tab on the website, where you'll also find the email contact thingamabob. And don't forget, I love to hear from you. I don't care if it's positive or negative, whether you got a question, a comment, or a suggestion for the show. Hit me up on that How Not to Sail or hotline, or on the email, or what have you. I'm looking forward to hanging out with the Barefoot Sailing Club from Lake Lanier soon. If you want to know more about them, go to barefootsailingclub.org, and maybe I'll see you there. Who knows? Finally, thanks to everybody that's left a nice 5-star review on the Apple Podcasts or on Amazon for the book or anywhere else you can do that. I hope you have some fun on the water soon, and I'll see you next time on How Not to Sail. Screwing up is part of cruising. Let me show you how.
All right.
Back off the energy or I'm okay?
I don't know.
All right.
It's going to be an old projector sound like you're in a... Well, forget I said that because that's going to be later.
You really don't want me to read this beforehand?
Oh, no.